From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Our conversations today revolve around Vietnam and the fall of Saigon in April of 1975. Wong Chi Trong was 13 then. She's the daughter of a South Vietnamese colonel who collaborated with the U.S. military. As forces from the north rolled in, Chi's family escaped, minus two brothers who became prisoners of war. They were eventually freed. The Trong family settled in California. Chi and her husband Chris Smith and their two children made their home, eventually, in Sacramento. Chi joined me in the studio recently for an extended conversation about her memoir, which was published in 2017. It's titled Tigerfish.
Professionally, I'm known as Chi Smith, and I took on my maiden name, Wong Chi Trong, to write this book because it is the story of my growing up in Vietnam. I was born in Nha Trang. It's a coastal town of South Vietnam. We moved to Da Nang when I was four.
Your father ended up being a colonel. So what kind of lifestyle did you have being the family of a military leader?
It was very guarded. They attempted to assassinate my mom and our family once. And so after that, we were very guarded. We didn't talk to people. We were shielded from the rest of the, I mean, we went to school and everything, but it was always in the back of our mind that the attempt could be made again. So as a child, there was always a threat of being assassinated. But it was a life of privilege. We had a lot of protection, and my dad didn't leave us wanting for anything. So we were doing well for Vietnam. Yeah.
Did you know or understand the word communism?
Yeah, we were brainwashed very well. Communism has always been that evil force that will come in and kill everyone who didn't believe in the ideal ideology. And what that was about is that they would come in and equalize. You know, they would take things away from the rich. That was their promise, and that had the appeal to the folks who are in abject poverty. And, you know, your family can perish, but they'll torture you before they get rid of you. Mm-hmm.
So do you think of your childhood as being frightened a lot?
Well, we normalize everything. We wake up, we have a breakfast, we had a breakfast, we went to school. But like I said, you know, there's always that insecurity of not knowing, will I see my dad again? Will the shelling get us this time? Because I remember distinctly waking up in the middle of the night, you know, when you're in your deep sleep and you hear shelling. And I was on the top bunk, and then my sibling, my brother was on the bottom. So whenever we heard the shelling, I would automatically jump to the bottom, get under the bed, and my brother would get down as well, and we would huddle until the shelling stopped. And you can hear it from beginning to end. And that's how we knew how close it was. You know, I was in Oregon recently with a thunderstorm so loud, I'd never heard it like that before. And that was a little triggering. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know that I had any of that PTSD, but my son had witnessed me jump so hard. Once he said, Mom, you need to get some help. You have some PTSD. And I never thought of myself as having that, you know, because you live with that, you normalize your surrounding.
Right, right. So you're talking about a lot of conflict between North and South Vietnam. When the Americans came in, what was your view of the Americans?
I'll just paint a quick picture. So my dad collaborated with them. And whenever he had an opportunity to come home, and he never did have scheduled visit, it was always unscheduled because to risk being sniped at. So a lot of time he would air his grievances towards his counterpart, his advisor, so-called advisors, who had never fought guerrilla wars before. They're fresh out of West Point. A lot of GIs that we would see, they were on the street. Now and then, my dad would have little parties for them to come to meet the family. But overall, we were very shielded. The exposures that I have was actually from the TV shows.
The Western movies?
Yeah, the Western movies. So my husband and I grew up watching the same thing two different countries, but yet he knew exactly what was going on and I didn't. You know, we just watched it for the entertainment part of it.
Because he's American. He saw the same movies yeah. at the same time.
So there was conflicting feelings about it. You know, we felt like we were being assisted to win the war on communism, but yet, you know, we saw a lot in real life conflicting with that claim.
What was your sense of war as a young person? And there's a reading about the numbers that if you're willing to do,
I'd
like to have you read. But was there an awareness in your childhood of war and a beginning of war?
Yes. So the shelling I mentioned in the morning, we would do a survey. Well, not me personally, but the drivers. He would do the driving and he would say such and such happened. Sometimes he would drive us by, you know, and you would see craters and you would see destruction.
And you were still going to school?
Oh, yeah. This was normal. Okay, it's a drive-by. This is what we're going to see. And I saw a lot of coffins being delivered to homes, soldiers coming home in wheelchairs, a lot of orphans having to peddle stuff on the street.
And you're in grade school then, right?
I was very young, yeah. So it's an imprint on my psyche, yes.
So would you read now the passage from Tigerfish?
Absolutely. On these evenings, we listened faithfully to our BBC radio programs on the same Philips shortwave radio my father had since his academy days. Sometimes they had a reporter with a strong northern accent, and when that combined with the static, we barely understood the content, but got the gist of the state of the war. Every day, just like today's NPR's Marketplace radio program, Doing the Number, this program did the numbers too, except it was of the defected Viet Cong who denounced communism to join the South Vietnamese armed forces or become civilians. The theme song for this program was hauntingly sad about a lost bird finding its way back home. To this day, I can sing the lyrics.
That's Chi Trong reading from Tigerfish. You might know that I'm going to ask if you can sing that song.
Oh. Something like Tung Kan Chim Ve Bieng Sa Wa. It's just spreading the wing to the faraway land.
Let me take you to March 28th, 1975, which was your family's last night in Da Nang. Again, I'm going to ask you to read a passage from the book.
That night, I lay in my bunk bed, staring at the white acoustic tiles on the ceiling, the same ones I stared at for the last 9 years of my life. But this was the first time I surveyed this room with such keen interest. My bedroom served as a bomb shelter. Its walls and ceiling reinforced with heavy gauge steel and filled with sandbags. Looking around the room, I saw two sets of bunk beds flanking a small desk, a floor fan, a seashell nightlight my brothers had made from a large chamber nautilus they found on the beach, a turntable where we played The Love Story and Romeo and Juliet albums, The Beatles, and endless vinyls of the 70s. There were posters of performers on the walls whose names I cannot recall. I pressed my body down onto my twin-sized mattress as though to imprint and capture all the memories of what I had experienced there, even though I thought I hated Da Nang. Somehow that night, I had a premonition that my life would soon take a dramatic turn, but I didn't know just how extreme. I recall studying my rooms, every detail as to not forget any of it. I then closed my eyes tightly as if to seal shut everything in my memory. I wanted to get some sleep. I prayed that we weren't too late on the escape attempt and that there wouldn't be any shelling that night, so we could leave first thing in the morning.
How vivid is that time in you still today?
Every time I read passages at author events, I have to steel myself and detach. I have had reviews that mention that it changed their political views, and that was never my intention. When I was a young mom, my daughter was about two, I looked at her and I understand the responsibility of being a mom. I wanted to know what my family, what my parents had to do to bring all seven children to America, why we had to do that, what we went through. What was it like for us back home? You know, we had a maybe not normal to the Americans, but it was more or less normal for us. And what were the struggles, the sacrifices everybody had to make to be here? It's because of life and liberty. As human being, it's universal that we all want the best for our children. As I wrote the story, it was only meant to be for my family. It was never meant to be public. And there were a lot of personal details that when I was younger, I didn't think that I would want to share. But starting in 2011, when the Syrian crisis started to happen and still happening now, I felt this moral obligation to share the stories. It was no longer my story. It was no longer something that sits on my computer. I really felt this tugging. I feel really compelled to shed a light onto the plight of the refugees. You know, we refugees are forced to flee for their life because of persecution, war, violence, as opposed to being an immigrant. You know, we need to make the distinction. Immigrant choose to leave for economic reason, for education, and they can go to their home country whenever they want to and not risk being killed. As opposed to refugees, we don't have that choice. So my dad was a colonel, and not just a colonel, he was a commanding officer. And if he was captured, imagine what would happen to him. They'd probably march him to the north and re-educate him. That is equivalent to torture and a slow death. And my mom with seven kids, there's no way we could eke out a living. So, you know, we fled to avoid persecution and death. And nobody wants to be ripped away from their homeland. We did it for life and for future generations. So a lot of time in the 70s or onward, actually, kids were, you know, they can be mean. I've been told many times to go back and fresh off the boat. And as refugee, we keep our heads down working, going to school, and avoid conflict. So that's what was driving me to write and self-publish, because I could have waited. And I felt like it's so timely and so relevant right now, and get my story, my narrative out there so that readers can understand the plight. We're not demons. We're being demonized. And I think that once you demonize a group of people, then it's easier to attack them and take their humanity away. Yes, I can march and I could do a lot of things to protest, but I decided that to write my book, to advocate and to shed a light on our suffering and our pain, and that we are human, just like our next door neighbors.
Even though you were a military and a higher socioeconomic level family, the transfer, the movement from Vietnam eventually to the United States, to Camp Pendleton in San Diego, still took 5 weeks, I believe.
It was anarchy as we saw it. Everybody was for themselves. Everybody had their interests to protect their family. And my dad didn't tell us until we're off the boat, but the fishing boat that we're, you know, my dad hired to take us to a certain destination, they had to cut it short because the boat owner held my dad at gunpoint and said, "Give me all your money." But he was able to make that a peaceful transition so we can dock earlier than our destination. But he was very tight-lipped until it was long done and behind us. So it was very arduous. And being high-ranking, that actually was probably more of a hindrance than help. Most people thought, well, you know, we got here because of that reason. You know, my dad's high-ranking, but that's not so.
your two brothers who were prisoners of war, they had been captured by the North Vietnamese. Were they in the army at the time?
This much I know about my oldest brother. He was in Cam Ranh when they rolled in and captured him. Thumb was in Da Nang. That's the moment I dread the most. I envision being home and I thought, we'll just close our shutters and just hide. I was 13, old enough to know better, but I thought, well, maybe if we just hide, then they couldn't find us, knowing darn well, of course they would find you. But that was the moment I was most scared of, it just being captured as they rolled in. Hmm.
You went back to Vietnam in 2005. What perspective did that give you?
I felt less guilty. Let's put it that way. Because when I left, you know, Vietnam as a country, I think of it as a mother. And for me to come back, to see her children, not in abject poverty, not that there isn't more poverty, but it's not like it was when I left. And so it made me happier that, yeah, there are people who are able to move on. Money from overseas flowing in, it helped people start a new business or whatever. So in 2005, the first thing I felt was, well, of course, fear, because it took everything for our family to leave. And I was so afraid that somehow they would capture me upon arrival. But because the name Smith, nobody knew I was the colonel's daughter. And then it was just a mixture of being happy and sad, you know, happy for the people, but sad that I don't know that my dad and mom, well, of course, they wouldn't see their homeland again. And for us as a culture to leave your ancestors, you know, their grave and your relatives behind, that's really frowned upon, mm-hmm. even though you had to leave for war. And it was important that my family, my husband and children, got to see where I came from. And they made comments about how this explained to us why you are the way you are. It was a positive, and I left feeling very at peace.
Your book title, Tiger Fish.
So I was born the year of the tiger. And when I came to America, when I had my first birthday party when I turned 16, I told my lab partner the next day, and she said, so you're a Pisces. And I said, what is that? And so she laughed and she said, well, it's two opposing fish. And so that's my duality being, is I was born the year of the tiger. So that's my Eastern upbringing with Confucianism and with family first, with tradition, and maybe contrast that with the fish, which is Western modernity, individuality. And tiger fish is just a perfect marriage of the struggle to be true to who you are.
What did writing this book give you?
I encourage people who experience a lot of drama to write, because for the longest time, I pushed it away. I was very ashamed, and I didn't know why. I had a lot of anger. And as a young mom, I would have these anger bursts. And I looked at my daughter and I thought, you know, when you hurt people that you love and you don't even know it. So I started to write about my experience. And once I start doing that, I felt layers and upon layers of deep, hidden, repressed emotions I didn't allow myself to feel. And I think that's very common with refugees and immigrants, delayed grief. And we don't give ourselves permission to feel bad about anything because we feel so grateful and lucky to be in America. Who are we to complain about anything? So we just march on. By writing, it helps me understand who I was and what I was missing all these years. So it really helped me feel like I'm a better mom, a better citizen.
Thank you, Chi. It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure to experience your story through your book and through you in person.
Thank you so much, Beth. It's my pleasure.
That was Wong Chi Trong Smith. Her memoir from 2017 is titled Tigerfish. We posted a link to her blog, which is chibeingchi.com. And there are more memories from Vietnam ahead. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio.